Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself. Hold on. Let me back up. I'm just so excited about this. Do you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast and online community? These creative endeavors are produced by KFUO Radio, the listener-supported broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We need your financial support during this year's Share-a-thon, April 3 through 5, to sustain the work we do to build our community of Lutheran women. Find your place to partner with us at kfuo.org/share-a-thon. Listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
This episode is dropping on Pi Day, which means we're celebrating pi because we love pi.
Yes.
Of course, normally when we do a party plan, we celebrate some holiday in the liturgical calendar. Yeah,
this is not a liturgical calendar.
This is not. This is just for fun. This is silliness.
Pure fluff.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yes. So this is a party plan episode, but I mean, I guess we're planning a party for you, but we kind of just planned a party for ourselves.
You know, I would wager to guess that probably there are more people out there who celebrate Pi Day than celebrate like St. Monica's Day.
That's probably true.
Yeah, that's fair.
And as we will see later on in the episode, no spoilers, there is a little bit of theology in this episode. So,
oh, well, okay.
All right.
Okay. I'm up for that.
Coming up. Stay tuned.
We're going to start with drama first, though, because I am providing some entertainment for today in the form of a big question. I don't do big questions all that often. However, I like doing just random ones, though. I think the last one I did was about pizza. So today, I have a lot of opinions about ovens and kinds of ovens.
You need an oven if you're going to make a pie.
That's very true. And I've used regular electric ovens and regular gas ovens and convection electric ovens and convection gas ovens. Oh. So I have an opinion about which one is the best one.
Okay.
So I'm asking the big question today. What kind of oven is the best kind for baking? The internet actually has some fun things to say, too. I asked the Ladies Lounge also, and there were some differing opinions. Not what I expected, however. So that was the fun part of this. I'm not as much of a baker as a lot of other people in the lounge. However, I use my oven a lot. And I am very particular about how things turn out, specifically my cookies that I absolutely love. They're so delicious. Sweet potato fries that we make three times a week for salad night because we have salad night three times a week with sweet potato fries. Because they're just really good. And delicata squash, which we make as much as we possibly can throughout the year.
I have not found one in ages. I keep looking for these delicious little squashes, and they're not in any of the stores I usually frequent, not even when they're in season. So enjoy those for me. Just like
very disappointing. I'm so sorry. We can usually find them. Whole Foods typically has them for most of the year. There's a little break in the summer where we can't find winter squash, but we also bake salmon, chicken that has skin on it because gotta live a little, and meatloaf in our oven. And I like them to come out consistent, and I also like them to be delicious. And
you asked a lot.
I know.
You hedonist.
Okay.
And to have maximum science, which didn't actually turn out to be maximum science because I wrote my poll in the Ladies Lounge before I fully thought through my question, but
Okay.
So I posted this poll with the answers of convection, regular, electric, and gas, but I forgot about the fact that gas can also be convection. So I probably should have added a fourth choice in here. So this is not total and absolute maximum science, but it's close. We're getting the idea here.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I am very much in the stark minority about my opinion, which is just fantastic. I asked, what kind of oven do you prefer for baking? And It is like almost dead even between regular gas or regular electric and gas, which I thought people were going to go for the gas oven here. And it was 44% gas and electric. However, electric just ever so slightly edged out with 196 votes. Facebook is weird on polls. Mm. It'll give you a percentage, but the numbers are...
They don't add up.
They don't add up. It's, I don't know.
That's hard for Maximum Science.
Right, I know. Zuckerberg. 196 for regular electric, 188. So, I mean, it's close, but regular electric ever so slightly edged out the gas oven. Convection was a lowly 12%. Mm-hmm. I am a huge fan of convection ovens, guys. This is my absolute favorite. Convection ovens, common gas and electric varieties. So this wasn't entirely Maximum Science. However, convection ovens, let me count the ways I love you. The first reason, crispy on the outside and soft on the inside. This is something that I have found very hard to do in a regular electric and a regular gas oven. Mm. Things turn out mushy. They turn out just completely hard. I don't know. Maybe it's user error. It's possible it's user error. Maybe I just don't know what I'm doing. Entirely possible. But the first time we used a convection oven, my husband and I were just like, floored. And it was totally an accident. We were staying with my friend. We were shopping for an oven at that point. And so we were paying attention to these things. And we noticed she has a double oven, double gas oven. And one of them is gas convection. And we were like, ooh, we're looking for an oven to purchase. We should try this. So we tried Delicata Squash in her convection gas oven. And we were sold. It is so good because it was crispy on the outside and nice and soft on the inside, like exactly how you want those baked vegetables, baked potato fries. My cookies are the same way. They're nice and crisp on the outside and soft on the inside. It's just, it is the best experience ever. And so we were sold. So we purchased our own double oven, but we got electric because our house is all electric for health reasons. And we never use the top part, this regular electric oven. We only ever use the bottom, which is convection electric. And I am in love. And so if you've never, I didn't actually know what convection was before this point. And it's not hard science. It's just there's a fan that blows the air around inside of a convection oven. So everything cooks a lot more evenly. A regular oven just has heating elements on the top and the bottom. So the convection just circulates. So that means it cooks more efficiently and you can cook stuff on lower temperatures typically. So it also saves you a bit of energy, which is nice. So when I set my oven at 400 for my cookies, it actually reads at 375. So it cooks at a lower temperature. The really complicated part, though, I can't tell you how many times I've accidentally burned my cookies because we usually use convection roast. So I just muscle memory hit the convection roast button for my cookies and then they burn. This is sad. But other than that, I love it. So I did a little Googling just to see if my opinion was actually anywhere close to what the internet will tell you is actually good for like baking, other than the stuff that I make, since I don't make a lot of regular food that a lot of other people make. And it turns out, according to thekitchenwithoutane.com, there are times you should and should not use convection. So convection is good, but not all the time for every food, according to this blog. So they say convection is good to use anytime you're roasting, which is typically what we use it for. So we're on track there. Or when you're baking pies and pastries. So that's good because the convection heat melts fat and creates steam faster, which helps you get more lift in pie doughs and pastries. So that's cool.
That makes sense.
When making lots of cookies, the heat is more even throughout the whole oven. So if you're putting a lot of stuff in the oven, it's better for that because the air circulates and everything tends to heat more evenly. And anytime you're cooking something with a cover, because anytime you cover something, the moisture loss isn't an issue. So it'll cook faster because the air circulation also creates some moisture loss, which is why it roasts really well. So if you're covering it, convection goes faster. And when you're toasting or dehydrating, because moisture loss when you're using convection makes things toast, dehydrate, roast beautifully. Now, they say don't use it when you're baking delicate foods that might be affected by air blowing on them. Makes sense. So that would include custards and flans, which Whoops, a hint for an upcoming episode. I totally baked a custard. And it turned out just fine. Uh-huh. So I don't know. Your mileage may vary on that one. Soufflés, which I never make, but according to them, cakes, quick breads, those things might not work so well. And then they said, this one's up to you, bread. And I know a lot of our ladies bake bread. So some say that convection creates better browning and a great crust, which I would totally believe. Others say that it dries out the interior of the bread. Mm. So that's totally kind of like up to you, maybe
personal
experiment.
Personal preference.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So to round out this big question, there were actually a lot of comments on the poll for what people love and don't love. Mm-hmm. Dasha, I'm sorry, I might be saying your name wrong. Reinke, she said microwave, which I love. Some people have the... You got to just use your microwave. Uh-huh. It counts. It counts for stuff. Not an oven, though. There are a bunch of people who have only used a regular conventional oven. So they're like, well, I've only used electric, so I can't really have an opinion. That's fine. Cheryl Snyder, she said one that works, which that's very true. Mm-hmm. And Liz, Arakelian, said one that does not have a motherboard. Ask me how many times I've had it repaired in the 3 years I've had it. So yes, that is very true. Having
analog ovens. Yup.
Yeah. When stuff gets more complicated electronically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's never fun. I am in the same boat as Jennifer Reamer. She said, I didn't know I preferred convection until we got one. It has steam convection feature that is amazing. Totally there. I had no idea it was so amazing until I got one. And Kimberly Myers is also on the same boat. She said that she loves her air fryer, so she had to vote convection. There's a lot of people who prefer a different type of oven for different types of baking, which is along the same lines as what I found in the kitchen article. There are several people who said that they've only experienced gas stoves that leak, and so they prefer electric now. So yeah, that's a little... That's a yikes. But I can understand why you would prefer electric if you've experienced gas leaks before. That does not sound fun. There's a lot of people who just prefer electric because it's a more even temperature on the inside. I can understand that. I've experienced that too. Mm-hmm. My favorite comment though, Krista Newmaster, she wins the comment section. My choice is an oven someone else operates.
Very cute.
Do you guys have opinions?
So I have oven is like, that's a big ticket item. You don't just like hear, oh, convection ovens are great, so let me just go out and get one of those. Like, it's a major appliance.
That's true.
So I still have the oven that came in my house when I bought it more than 15 years ago. And previous to that, I had the oven that was in the apartment that came with my apartment. So I have yet to actually select my own range. That said, if I were in the position to be doing it, I think I would probably look for, maybe I would get convection. I don't know if I'd want to get only convection. Yeah. And I know I don't have space for a double oven. Mm-hmm. So if there's a way to turn it on and off. But also that said, I've talked before about the fact that since I'm single, maybe I haven't. Anyway, I have a truly excellent toaster oven.
Yes.
I use on the regular for, honestly, I use that all the time.
Yeah.
And it does have a convection feature.
It has
all sorts of little features. Yeah. And I love it. And I cook I hardly ever turn on my oven. Yeah. I do use my stovetop a lot, but I hardly ever actually use my oven.
Yeah.
And so the toaster oven, I use the convection feature a lot. So maybe if I were going to be purchasing a new one, perhaps I would consider it. But I will always have a toaster oven that includes a lot of functionality. And I will definitely want it to have a convection feature.
Yeah, toaster ovens did come up as a very great option. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about you, Rachel?
Yeah, I am with Aaron. I use whatever oven is in the house that I currently abide in. But having lived in like 5 houses in the last decade, you know, if I bought a new oven every time we moved, that would be
You've experienced a lot.
Yeah. I have. I will say my opinion is my favorite oven is not the one I have right now, which is possibly older than all my children. But it does the job. It's just, it's an electric oven, and older electric ovens, they take forever to heat up.
Yeah.
And they're very unreliable when it comes to like knowing exactly how hot.
Yeah.
Sarah, I never knew there was a gas convection oven. I've only used a convection oven once in my life, and that was, like 20 plus years ago when I was nannying for a family that obviously had a nicer oven than I've ever owned. And I really enjoyed it, but I love gas stoves.
Yeah.
And
agreed.
Yes. And so if I ever am in the position of buying an oven, I might very well go gas stove, gas convection oven, because it does. You're right. They do a nice job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is also the option of dual fuel, mm-hmm. I have learned. So you can get a gas stovetop and an electric oven.
That's true.
Is an option.
Maybe so.
I have no idea how expensive they are. But
use my oven a lot. I need one that is, do they make energy efficient ones? Because I am notorious in my family for always forgetting to turn off the oven.
Oh, no.
Because I am so eager to get dinner on the table. If, say, I've been cooking a roast for the last 3 hours, and I'm just like, okay, it's time. Open the oven, pull it out, put it on the table. Let's go, supper time. And then, like, 3 hours later, someone will be in the kitchen, you know, cleaning up or something. I'll be like, are you baking something? Why is the oven on? Like, this happens probably once a week in my life. I need an oven that will work with me on that.
Yeah.
Or maybe one that just like after it's been on for the last 6 hours, it'll just send you a little like 6 hours. Are you still there?
Hello.
I don't think I've ever left one on overnight before, but I'm not going to swear to that.
The nice thing about convection for you maybe is that the fans make noise. So
True.
Okay, that's sold. Sold. Yeah. Get me a convection oven stat.
Yeah, it's noise.
Yeah.
They're not quiet. At least the ones I've used are not quiet because they've got the fans running. So
Okay. Yeah. That would solve my little problem probably.
Yeah.
And to be fair, lest I sound like a snob, I have also used whatever has been in whatever apartment or house we've lived in, which is why I've ended up using so many.
Yeah.
We just happened, the full story is that my parents' poor stove was so old and they really needed a new stove. And so we took our stove from our house that was there when we bought it and loaded it up into our vehicle and drove it to Michigan to my parents and gave that to them for their Christmas present last year.
Okay.
So they have the stove that came in our house that we bought, and then we bought ourselves what we wanted off of Facebook because we only ever buy anything off of Facebook.
Yeah. Of course. So
that's the whole story, which is why that's why we bought a new one.
Nice.
Anyway, that's the end of my little story. Rachel.
No.
Aaron.
Because if you're using an oven, then we should discuss what you should bake in it.
I love it. What should we bake in our ovens, Aaron?
So I thought about, since it's pie day, we already did a pie focused episode with, of course, dessert pies. Mm. So I decided to focus on one of my heartfelt dishes of my life, and that is chicken pot pie.
Yes.
It is in the DNA of like it. To me, it's one of it might be my ultimate comfort food out there. But specifically, I enjoy chicken pot pie in general. However, the reason that it is such a comfort food is because, of course, my mom made it. You know, that's how you get a comfort food that sticks with you forever. It's the one that my mom would make for special occasions. And the recipe that she used is actually from the Betty Crocker cookbook that they got as a wedding gift back in the 70s.
Classic.
So that is the starting point of the recipe that I'm going to share with you guys. It has been modified through the years because we have made it so much. However, the defining feature of the 1970s Betty Crocker chicken pot pie is the celery seed crust.
Oh,
it is
surprising,
unique, and honest. I love pie. This has been established before. I'm a strong advocate of pie. And you just don't, I don't know why, but you don't come across inclusions in crusts that often. Somehow crusts are almost always like there's a purity to them. They're reserved for the play happens in the filling, not in the crust.
For ingredients. You've got to be a crust purist. Flour, shortening, salt, water.
Right.
Like, that's it.
Exactly.
Except this has celery salt.
Except the celery seed.
Celery seed.
Celery seed. I know. I know.
So surprising.
That's some spicy pie crust.
So, okay. But for celery seed isn't spicy. Okay. It's, you know.
It's got flavor. That makes it spicy for pie crust.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I just don't want people out there who haven't had celery seed before to think that it's going to make it spicy
no,
hot.
No. Not spicy like hot. Spicy like hot. Flavorful.
Thank you. Exactly. So I have a recipe. I'll talk you through the gist of it, but it is pretty flexible. The classic recipe that we have would make basically an 8x8 casserole dish. But it's a hearty dish. Like that would feed our family when we were a family of five. There probably wouldn't be much in the way of leftovers, but since it's fairly rich. It's pie crust and a rich sauce. It's solid. It'll stick with you. It's winter food.
Oh yeah.
However, you can also scale it up, and I will include the notes that we have for scaling it up to like a 9x13 if you're going to be in a bigger group than a family of five. Or I have also used this recipe, and I went on this quest last winter because I was like, I love chicken pot pies, and it is nice. And I thought to myself, I'm always so disappointed by the freezer chicken pot pies, like the little mini chicken pot
pies. Nasty.
They are. They're just disappointing.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, Erin, what if you made your own miniature chicken pot pies and stocked your freezer with them? And then when you wanted a chicken pot pie for supper, you could just pull one out of the freezer. And so I tested it out, and sure enough, is a totally adaptable to that purpose as well. So I stocked my freezer with chicken pot pies. I then got in my head that this would be also, I could size them to like a portion that I wanted as an individual portion, because often the chicken pot pies that I could buy in the freezer were really bigger than I wanted as like a single serving.
Yeah.
I would finish it, but that wasn't really my best choice in life. And I was like, why not make it the size that I really want and will be satisfied with? And so I did a little experimenting and settled on a pie size. I got miniature little aluminum foil pie tins, but then I got those because I was like, I could give these away. I could,
yeah.
If I have, and I was like, especially for if I have friends who are going through like a hard time, or maybe just like their first time. Anyway, like when you don't want to give somebody a whole casserole because that's a commitment. Like giving a single person a casserole, it's too much. Okay,
it's too much.
And it's heartfelt, but still, it's a lot. But if you give them individual chicken pot pies, then they can enjoy meals over the course of several days. And so I got some that I would be able to then freeze and give away. And then I also got myself little reusable, like just miniature pie pans that I'm like, well, I don't need to just throw these used things away every time. I could reuse these pie tins. So anyway, I got it all set up. It's been great. I'm still working through the last of the large batch of chicken pot pies that I made last spring. I will also share with you. No, first I'm going to talk through the recipe. Then I'm going to share with you a small song. It's not.
Ooh.
Don't get too excited about it. But anyway, it's more of a chant than a song.
It's even better.
So basically, the chicken pot pie filling, essentially, you start by making a roux. So
always
equal parts butter and flour, Yes. Always start with a roux. Add some onion, salt and pepper, and a little bit of herbs. And then you mix in chicken broth and milk. The recipe that we have, this is one of the changes we've made, but we like basically two parts chicken broth, one part milk. And if you're like, want it a little fancier, or if you're like me and you're like, I don't keep milk. I don't drink enough milk to keep it anyway. You don't need to use, don't just substitute cream for it, but you can just add some cream if you don't have milk. Okay. So you want to end up with three cups of liquid, but it's nice to have some sort of milky part of the liquid. Okay. Mm-hmm. Makes it good. And then cut up chicken, cooked chicken, however you want to use it. If you want to pick a rotisserie or just boil some chicken breast or whatever, cut up cooked chicken, a pound of frozen mixed vegetables. We also increased this from Betty Crocker's recommendation. And I will say, I don't want to have my chicken pot pie be too sauce heavy. That is often a complaint I have with other pot pies out there. I'm like, where's the chicken?
Right.
Okay. I want some vegetable in this. Okay. You could totally add your own vegetables. I was like, I had a bunch of asparagus. So I was like, voila, spring vegetable chicken pot pie last spring.
Interesting.
So I didn't use the frozen mixed vegetables. I put in asparagus and other spring vegetables. Get creative, but basically a pound of mixed vegetables chopped up and 11 ounces of cooked chicken.
Okay.
And then one double crust recipe. Okay. And then with the crust, it is a classic crust recipe, and I'll include the one that I use. I have come around. I appreciate a food processor. I actually bought a food processor, a full size one, because I found that I was making so many pies with these chicken pot pies. And I was like, it is a lot easier. It is a lot easier, and it makes a very satisfying crust. So anyway, I will include the directions for using a food processor to make this crust, but you add celery seed to it. And that is the distinguishing factor here. Then you basically just roll out your dough, fill it, top it with dough. Now you can, why not? If you're doing this as self-care or to care for someone else, why not cut an adorable little design on the top of it?
Aww.
Because you can. If you don't have time, just stab it a couple times with a knife. It's fine. You don't have to make it pretty. But if you have a little bit of time, cut a little heart in that. And then 3 months down the line, when you pull it out of the freezer, you're like, oh, look at that. A little heart on my chicken pot pie.
A little bit makes of joy.
Makes you feel happy. Yes. I made a chicken pot pie. I'm trying to see if we have a picture of it. But I made a chicken pot pie for my friends that I have supper with often, their family. It's a family pie, and their family has a deep love of this very strange. I mean, it's charming, but a little disturbing also. Anyway, it's like a slug monster. It's a design that the husband invented. It's like a little cartoon. He's got a big gaping mouth. He's a slug. Anyway, it's a thing. So I put that on top of the chicken pot pie for the family because I knew they'd appreciate it. And then like the pie just boiled right out of his mouth. It was fantastic.
My goodness.
They thought it was amazing. So
I love it.
Put whatever design you want on it. It can be as simple or as elaborate as you want to do with it. But then you're just going to bake it. If you're making a whole pie, you bake it at a higher temperature. If you are baking this frozen, you just unwrap it. Don't leave the plastic on. Okay. Anyway, don't do it.
So waste a good pie right there.
It was terrible. Do that.
But don't thaw it. Just put it directly into the oven. And in fact, if you're making this from frozen, if you're baking a mini pot pie, you don't even have to preheat the oven. Just put it in there as you're preheating it.
Yeah,
it's fine. Just pop it right in. I have designated timers saved on my phone for chicken pot pies because three timers simultaneously, okay? The first timer tells me when I should remove the little pie crust protector thing that I start out with in there to so that I have a perfect pie crust at the end. The second timer tells me when I should pull it out of the oven. And let me tell you, even though it's a mini pot pie, it is lava. It's the temperature of the sun, okay? It looks amazing. It's bubbling. It's glorious, but it is so intensely hot, and it's going to stay hot for a long time. So my third timer tells me when I should come back and actually eat the pie, because it does need time to cool. That pie crust holds in the heat, okay? But it's delicious. It is very delicious, and you're gonna enjoy it. Everything else about it is a classic pot pie. The celery seed is the only quirk about the pie, but I do think it really adds a little something extra special.
Yeah.
So
I think it would.
Yeah. Chicken pot pie. Oh, here's my special chant that developed.
Yes.
And now whenever I decide I'm going to have a chicken, I usually like sometime during the day I'm at work and I'm like, what am I going to have for supper tonight? And if I decide I'm having chicken pot pie, then I will start chanting this. Chicken pot pie and I don't care. Chicken pot pie and I don't care. Chicken pot pie and I don't care. Oh, chicken pot pie. And then I'll sing it as I walk out to my car because I'm excited. It's like a fight song, a chicken pot pie fight song.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm going to have that in my head for the next week. Thank
you're
you.
Welcome.
I expect you're welcome. To hear that over the cubicle walls at some point.
It's great. So
I love it.
Oh, that sounds great. And I'm glad that you highlighted savory pie because as we're going to find out in our next segment, trivia.
Yes.
The savory pie goes back a lot further than the sweet pie in the history of pies. Mm. That is a freebie. The rest are going to be not so freebies. However, the reason we have Pie Day is not just because we love to eat pie. It's because we love the number pie.
Oh, yes.
Remember, it's called Pie Day because it's March 14th, 3.14.
Yeah. That's right. Uh-huh. That's why. 3.14.
So, I hope you guys are ready for some mixed trivia on pie and pie.
I love it.
I happen to really, really love pie, both of them. And as a homeschool mom, I probably encounter pie more often than I encounter pie, if you know what I mean. And there are some great pie jokes as well. For example, this is quite on theme. What is the formula for determining the area of a circle? Do y'all remember?
The area, pi r squared.
Pi r not squared, pi r round.
Oh, this is
good. Could do this all day.
I love it.
So which are we going to do first, pi or pi? Do our homework or get our dessert? Well, we'll figure that question out by asking, which is actually older, the pi you eat or the pi you do math with? I mean, obviously, the pie you do math with is woven into the fabric of creation. Yeah. So that one is technically older. Right. But our awareness of it, our awareness of it, which is older?
I would say pie you eat. And I'm going to go with math pie.
Math pie.
Okay. Actually, Sarah's got it. Apparently, it's hard to think on an empty stomach, but they're really close. They're really close. So early pies, we see them in sort of a variation on the tomb walls of Pharaoh Ramses II. But we actually have a recipe for chicken pie written on a tablet in ancient Sumer sometime before 2000 BC.
Whoa!
So your chicken pie is in very good company. This, by the way, all my research today, because I was too busy partying, is going to be pretty much just all from Wikipedia, but full disclosure, links in the show notes. You can double check. In contrast, pi, the mathematical value, it's really close. We have in Babylon a clay tablet dated sometime between 1900 and 1600 BC.
Wow.
Which gets pi as 25/8, which is 3.125. Oh. In Egypt,
okay,
there is a record that probably goes back to 1850 BC, which treats pi as approximately 3.1. We actually even have a reference in the Bible, 1 Kings 7:23, where it's talking about Solomon's temple.
Okay.
He made the sea of cast metal circular in shape, measuring 10 cubits from rim to rim and 5 cubits high. It took a line of 30 cubits to measure around it. And so if you do that, if you look at that ratio, it comes out to pi as the number 3 evenly. Aww. So rounding, cubits are not exactly, you know, down to millimeters.
Still.
Pi is in the Bible, guys.
Not perfect. And some people have problems with that lack of mathematical precision in that passage. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the cubit, it's a measure from your fingertip to your elbow. It's not exactly a precise measuring tool.
Yeah.
Okay. So pie that you eat came first.
Okay.
But not all pie.
Mm.
Not all pie. Mm-hmm. Because the in many of the earliest kinds of pie, there was always a part of the pie that was not meant to be consumed. What was it?
The crust. This has come up before.
Mm. Yes, it has. I can't remember when. Like, this
I don't
is, it's going full circle. Happy Pie
it
Day.
Was an episode, but I don't know what episode it was.
So yeah, the Romans, and actually later on in the medieval era, they would make a plain pastry of flour, oil, and water, sometimes just flour and water.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal was to cover meat, completely encase meat while it was cooking to keep the juices in.
Mm-hmm.
And this would also, as long as you didn't crack the crust, make it last longer in pre-refrigeration days because it's kind of airtight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the covering was not meant to be eaten at first.
Hmm.
Yeah. So for Romans, early pies were just meant as a vehicle for cooked meat. But they did also enjoy, because the Romans were very decadent, they enjoyed pastries that functioned more as the kind of pies that we enjoy. I'll call them proto-pies.
Proto-pies.
Okay. Proto-pies.
Mm-hmm.
One in particular, which was an early ancestor of baklava, was very popular, even though the name of it would raise eyebrows today. So we won't be doing this as an iron ladle challenge, but which Roman precursor to the modern flaky pie inspired the name of an anatomical product associated with childbirth?
Oh, speculoos.
Oh, is
nope.
It?
Oh. I don't know.
If there are any men listening right now, you might want to cover your ears because there's just no way you're going to be comfortable during this part of the podcast recording.
Let's see. What? Other, what else could we go
anatomical
with?
What?
I'm calling it a product.
Anatomical product. The name of a pie. Have we heard this name before? Like once
not on the pot. Oh, you'll recognize it when you hear it.
Okay, so but it's not like there's a chance we will we'll recognize it when we hear it, but we have not discussed it before.
We have not. This is totally new content for you.
Okay.
And I'm so sorry.
Does it have something to do? Wait, say once more than what the description of it.
It is a flaky type of pie, somewhere in between a pie and a cheesecake, which inspired the name of an anatomical product associated with childbirth.
Childbirth. Neither Sarah nor I have given birth.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. This is why we're stumped. I don't even know what you're talking about.
I'll give it to you, and you're going to feel very uncomfortable for about 3 seconds. It is placenta.
Okay. I was thinking like a tool.
Not an actual. And when I first saw this in the article, I was like, no. Oh, no. So, but it's true. In the cookbook De Agricultura,
mm-hmm.
oh no, not a cookbook, just a cultural guide.
Okay.
Marcus Porcius Cato notes that notes a recipe for a popular pie slash cake called placenta.
Huh. Interesting.
Like, okay. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Which that came first? Pie came first.
Really?
The placenta of our bodies was named for the pie.
It was named for the pie.
What? Yeah.
Okay.
Huh. Okay. Yep. Let's move on. Okay. Gentlemen, you can unplug your ears now. I promise never to do that again. Speaking of strange names for food, what did medieval chefs call their pie crust? And I'll give you a hint. They didn't like eating them any more than the Romans did. And I'll give you another hint. This name came about probably because they are full of dead animals. Savory pie, etc. Oh.
Casket?
Shrouds.
You're closer than you think.
Tomb?
Nope. Same area, though.
Mortuary?
Cloths?
What do you put your casket into?
Hole in the ground?
Vault?
Oh. Well, yeah, nowadays we do.
Oh, the building
grave.
Thing?
Another name for a casket. You can do this. I believe in you both.
Coffin.
Yes.
Wow. This is usually we're more on fire than this.
It started strong, but some of these were things that I did not expect. So I'm not surprised that you did not expect them either.
We can't win every time. Yeah.
So the earliest pie recipes in the medieval era refer to coffins, C-O-F-F-Y-N-S.
I love it.
Which was a word more generally used for a basket or box with straight sealed sides and a top. This again from Wikipedia.
Interesting.
And they did not actually eat the coffin pastry usually, since it was just to fill whatever was in it and extend the shelf life.
Yeah. Mm.
And this crust was, I'm not sure you would have wanted to eat it because it had to be cracked open to get at the filling.
Okay.
Not exactly.
Bread bowls are kind of that hard too. So
kind of. Yeah. Medieval bread bowls. Yep. Eat the soup out of it and think about eating the bowl, but maybe don't. Actually, I love a bread bowl.
Yeah.
They're so good. Yeah.
So on that note, since I no longer trust myself to talk about pie that you eat, because seriously, what is wrong with me? And you've probably already lost your appetites anyway. Let's see what you know about pie the number.
Oh, boy.
Mm, okay. Not much.
I think we were stumped the first time.
I know.
What is pie good for? Why do we need it?
For mathing things?
Yeah, it does especially help us with circles.
Yes, circles. That's the word I'm looking for. Circles.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really need pi because circles are weird and can't be squared. And if you remember, all of our areas are in square units. This is a problem.
Yeah.
This did not stop people from trying, though. There was a problem. This squaring the circle was a problem first proposed by Greek mathematicians. Hmm. And the idea is that you are constructing a square with the area of a circle.
Okay.
Using only a compass and straight edge.
Oh,
like, it's the ultimate escape room of math problems. And it wasn't until 1882 that they proved that you couldn't actually do it.
1882?
Huh.
Wow.
But we really need pi.
Okay.
Yeah.
To do any math involving either the area or diameter of a circle or the volume or surface area of a sphere, cylinder, or cone, we just gotta have pi. It's like it's our ultimate cheat code. And if you think about how much of our life involves something in one or another of those shapes. We literally couldn't drive out of our driveways without pie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does this include any curves? Is pie useful in any curves or only circles?
No, for an arc, it is just a curve is not necessarily useful for pie, but if it is an arc that is part of a circle. So for example, a semicircle is half a circle plus a line. And yes, you got to have pi for that.
Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Very
amorphous shapes, not so much.
No. But
if it was part of a circle,
yep,
and includes any edge of the circle,
mm-hmm,
you need pi.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Okay.
So as we've already discussed, pi was discovered and begun to be used very early on in human history. And the formula to find pi really isn't that hard. So I'll ask you, because I mean, if the ancient Egyptians could figure it out, they were smart, but they didn't have supercomputers or anything. Although if you are there any conspiracy theories out there, just like leave that last statement. They probably didn't have supercomputers. Okay. But how do we find pi? It's a rather simple process.
I have no idea.
You can go the opposite way, right? So if the circumference of a circle is 2 pi r, you could go the other way. If you know the circumference of a circle, then you work backwards and then you get to pi. I would need a piece of paper to remember exactly what it is.
You are exactly right.
It's around.
Yep. If you take the ratio of the circumference to the diameter, which is your 2 r or mm-hmm, your d,
mm-hmm,
you will get pi. And very, it will show up every single time. If you're working with a true circle, you will get true pi. So it's a beautiful thing. And as I previously mentioned, I really love pi. It is one of a number of mathematical concepts that I see as very theological.
Aha.
In its just simple existence.
Okay.
So here's your next question.
Mm-hmm.
How is pi like God? There are several possible answers
infinite
here. It's infinite.
It's like it's never, there is no end
there
to it.
No
and
end?
It's like because of that, we can't really know it. Like it's, you can't get to the end of it. You can't know all of pi.
Yeah. We never have yet.
Yeah.
We never have yet. Yeah. Excellent. So pi is an irrational number, which means it goes off into infinity without, as far as we know, ever. They've proven that it never repeats. So it is eternal. It is non-repeating. It is irrational. It is impossible for our minds to completely grasp it. And it is what is called, and this is, I love this, a transcendental number.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
This means that it cannot be a solution of an algebraic equation involving only finite sums, products, powers, and integers. In other words, we can't use finite numbers to get to pi.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so,
of
such
course,
a...
There's a creator!
Creator!
Pi! Without a creator.
Yeah. Oh, it's so gorgeous. It's pointing.
Yes.
But then even on top of this, what is pi itself? It is, well, I mean, we all know 3.14, March 14th,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is 3 and a little bit. And that little bit is infinity stretching out into the future. Like... it's a bit of a stretch. Yeah, this is speculative mathematics. But, you know, in this, for me at least, with eyes of faith looking at this, I'm like, yes, thank you. Thank you for this beautiful number that makes my head swim.
Yeah.
And I don't know, when I get to heaven, maybe I can ask the Lord if that was, if I was just imagining it or if it was a real thing. But I just love pi because it humbles me. Humbles me deeply, even to think about it.
Yeah.
Math is amazing. I tell my kids when they're complaining about math, I'm like, math is a divine language.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's beautiful. All right. So we know that pi is an irrational, infinitely going on into ever smaller and smaller portions kind of number.
Mm-hmm.
How many digits of pi do we actually know at this point in history?
Oh,
I don't know. But I mean, with the supercomputers, I bet it's a lot. A quadrillion.
Quadrillion. Okay. What is a...
I don't know.
Actually, you know what? You're high on that.
You're high? Oh, whoa. Oh, only a gajillion?
Only a gajillion.
5,000.
5,000. Aaron was closer. So the best known, going all the way back, before the time of Christ, we got to about two decimal places. Mm-hmm. You know, we got 3.14.
Okay.
And then around a little after that time, Chinese mathematicians were able to get it to about seven decimal places.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there it stopped until the late medieval period. Yeah, we just, pi had seven digits.
Okay, cool.
But as of 2021, and it may have, the number may be higher even now, that was when a team of Swiss scientists, over 3.5 months and a data center's worth of computer equipment, calculated pi to 62.8 trillion digits.
Whoa! Man.
That's so many!
Man, 62.8 trillion?
And they didn't come to the end of it.
No!
Yeah.
It's wild!
That is... Yeah. Oh. And then they're like, their sponsors are like, what are we doing with this, guys? Like, why do you need more time with the data center to keep going? How's that going to help us do something more? It is super cool.
It is super
cool. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's a lot of people and a lot of equipment to calculate pi. Hopefully it will help them make more precise watches or whatever they do in Switzerland these days.
Yeah.
Engineers are probably very happy. They're like a little closer to actual precision now. Thank you.
Yep.
So last part of the question, how many digits of pi do you know?
1, 3.14157, 5.
I can claim the three. The others I never remember. So 3.14, that's what I got.
I can go to 3.1459 pretty easily. That's where I usually stall out. However, there are a lot of people, including my at least one of my children, who can go to 100 digits of pi.
What?
Wow.
That's wild.
And guess how they do it?
They have a song.
Yeah. They have a song.
There has to be a song.
There is a song on YouTube, link in the show notes, that is to the tune of In the Hall of the Mountain King.
Oh, that's even better.
Okay.
And it starts 3.14159. I won't go any further because both the number and the tune are public domain. But the rest, not all the song is, I'm sure. Uh-huh. Awesome. So yes, you too can memorize pi to the 100th decimal place if you really want to.
That's hilarious.
And that's where I'll leave you. Enjoy your pie day. Eat some pie, but also do some math. Because it's marvelous. It really is.
Well, this has been quite the pie day festivity. Maybe you learned something. Maybe you have some opinions. Maybe you're going to go bake some chicken pot pie for yourself and all of your neighbors. Uh-huh. It's a great day. And go listen to that song because now I really need to know the rest of it. Ladies, if you did anything special for Pi Day, math or food related or otherwise, share with us in the comments of this episode, in our Facebook group, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge on Facebook, or on Instagram at Lutheran Ladies Lounge there. You can find all of our episodes at KFUO.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. Happy Pi Day! You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I just want to say one more time, 3.infinity is like an amazing number. Happy Pi Day. I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at KFUO.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us, too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at KFUO.org/give.